Welcome to the Exodus Cry podcast, where we have honest conversations around exploitation, trafficking, sexual culture, and justice.
Welcome to today's episode featuring Arden Young, an investigative journalist from Sound Investigations. Arden takes us undercover into the depths of the adult industry, unveiling the truth behind Pornhub and its parent company, ILO. Let's get into the episode.
Arden Young, we are so happy to have you on the podcast. I was just telling our staff yesterday at Exodus Cry just about the important work that you're doing and just how amazing your story is of somebody who saw what was happening in this larger realm of pornography, which we'll get into, Pornhub, ALO, their parent company, and didn't just think that's awful, but you like actually took action in a very serious way to help expose the problem that's going on and galvanize action. And your story is honestly like one of the most inspiring that I have heard. And as far as like people just responding to the awareness that was brought to this whole situation through the Trafficking Hub campaign. So I would love for you to just share with our audience and just, I want to hear, I know just a little bit, but I really want to hear like the full story of how you came into this space of essentially, you know, fighting criminal porn. And yeah, I want to hear the whole story.
Of course. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. It's overwhelming to look at all the work that Exodus Cry has done at raising awareness and getting trafficking issues into the mainstream space, getting people talking about it. That's not an easy thing to do. So thank you for having me. My background, I've never investigated the online pornography industry before. This was a first for me. My original work background, actually, I grew up as an actress in Hollywood. I would do, you know, little guest spots on kids shows, teen shows, like NCIS, stuff like that. And that's what I thought I wanted to do for the foreseeable future, is I wanted to be an actress. I wanted to get bigger and bigger roles. Well, when I got into my 20s, I kind of realized the world didn't revolve around me. And maybe acting, maybe my intentions of being an actress weren't pure, maybe a little bit self-centered. And I did see a lot of very inappropriate situations happen in Hollywood, in my work, in whatever, acting classes, photo shoots, involving children, sometimes involving myself, that at the time, I didn't really have the wherewithal to realize how disgusting they were. And I think that planted the seed that made me care about sexual exploitation in general. And then I would do little odd jobs for my dad, who is a private investigator and a lawyer. So he would like send me into businesses undercover and have me ask questions. And I think that's what made me have the confidence to go undercover into these situations. So after all that, I got into undercover journalism. I investigated things that, you know, of course, you'll never see my face attached to them.
Right.
But for this investigation, when we began investigating Pornhub at the beginning of this year, 2023, this is something I wanted my face on. And it was really inspired by the 2020 New York Times article, Nicholas Kristof, The Children of Pornhub, that made us decide, like, yes, we have to investigate Pornhub. We have to. And our premise was that they had publicly changed some of their policies to make it a safer platform, but how safe was it really? So we wanted to find out those details.
Take a moment just for people who maybe just are getting up to speed on a lot of the background and the premise of what you and I are familiar with, but they may not be familiar with. So the Nick Kristof article, I'll just give a little bit of backdrop to that to kind of update anyone who isn't familiar with that. We launched this campaign called Trafficking Hub, spearheaded by our then director of abolition, Lila Micklewaite. And really just the idea was just drawing attention to the fact that Pornhub was enabling and profiting from videos of real abuse and trafficking and other things, that they effectively had no moderation system to filter videos that were being uploaded. So there was a lot going on there on Pornhub that was being discovered that we were attempting to bring attention to. Well, the Washington Examiner published an op-ed by Lila, and the very next day, the BBC published an article of a survivor who had videos of their abuse featured on Pornhub. It was really interesting because the journalists had been working on that for a year. And so the timing just synced up in a way where it was like, our article came out one day, and then the very next day, the BBC's article came out. Both articles went viral, and it really gave this wave of momentum to the Trafficking Hub campaign, which again is all about just the issues going on with Pornhub. So a few months after that, we launched this short animated video, and that goes viral.
Yeah.
Gets the attention of Nick Kristof. He begins his own investigation, and over a number of months puts together this article. That article comes out, The Children of Pornhub. It's one of, journalism now is so tabloid. I think we're seeing the death of journalism in a lot of ways. And this was a robust, substantive, in-depth article, really laying bare the issues at hand with the world's largest porn site, Pornhub, and featuring some of the people who've been victimized by it in a way that was so arresting. So I just wanted to give that little bit of context
for your
story for people who may or may not have heard of that. So that article was catalytic. And it came around 10 months into this like larger campaign that was going on. So, okay. So I just want to give a little
bit
of substance to that.
Talk about cosmic timing. Yeah. I don't think I verbalized this to you, but if that article were never written, if the Trafficking Hub campaign was never done, without your work, I don't think I would have investigated this at all.
Mm.
I don't think it would have happened. I wouldn't have known.
Mm.
It wouldn't have been at the forefront for me to see it.
Well, what I love about your story is that, and I wanted you to get back to, giving us the narrative because it's so inspiring to me, but is when an article like that comes out, I mean, it was, this whole revelation about Pornhub was really like earth shattering because I think that in many ways, the internet is still relatively new. It's been around for around 30 years. And there's, Pornhub had really established and built up this reputation of being this pop culture, porn chic brand. They were at New York Fashion Week. There was this idea of the normalization and of pornography in a way that made it like just completely chic, hip, cool.
Cool, like, nothing to be ashamed of.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And so this revelation that there were videos of real abuse, trafficking, children being exploited, all these different forms of exploitation was like really earth shattering. And the fact that it happened during the COVID lockdowns also added to the viral nature of the campaign because people were online. But all that being said, the point that I'm trying to get to is that people, that an article like this comes out and I think for a lot of people, they go, man, that's awful. Maybe they stop watching porn for a week, you know, and then go on about their lives, business as usual. And for you, this really was, in a way, like a burning bush moment. Like, it really grabbed a hold of you in a way that, like, you made a conscious, intentional decision to follow through on the claims that were made in this article and find out for yourself what was going on. And it has added so much more fuel into the fire of exposing this criminal organization. So, okay, I just want to lay that context. Okay, so now I'll keep going.
Yeah, well, I have to give so much credit to the founder of Sound Investigations, which is the organization I work under. His name's Eric. He spearheaded this entire thing. He really was a huge part of the planning, everything we did. He self-funded it out of his savings account.
Wow.
Everything we've done so far has been paid for by him personally, that he just saved up over the years since 2020 to be able to do this. And we finally were able to get it done this year. And, you know, we said, you know, it's going to be a nonprofit, but before we go around asking people for money, we have to prove we're able to do this. Yeah. We're able to actually record Pornhub, ALO, MindGeek, whatever employees admitting to illegal activities currently happening.
It's, in a way, it's so audacious to even attempt something like this. And so I started seeing these videos get dropped and I was like, this is so badass. That's what I thought. And like, it is that idea of like holding perpetrators accountable, speaking truth to power, you know, being a courageous person and advocating on behalf of those who are being overlooked and victimized and whose voices are being silenced, and or their story is being turned into something else, like this weird documentary that was done about the trafficking campaign.
Literally just like, thinking about that.
Just so twisted.
Yeah.
And so Sound Investigations, your dad's a PI. I'm actually writing a screenplay right now where one of the two main characters is a PI.
So, oh, perfect. Yeah. That's awesome.
And so you come into this like a little, it's kind of like in your family genes a bit.
Yeah.
And then you actually go on the journey. So tell us about that. What is that like, of beginning that investigation?
Well, it was overwhelming learning about how wide and deep MindGeek/ALO, whatever they're calling themselves these days, their roots just go so deep, and no one knows all of what they own. So it was overwhelming. And I mean, we really just used publicly available information to find out who worked there. And we did what we could to try to meet up with them and record them. It was probably a total of 4 or 5 months in the field, just going back and forth from the States to Montreal, where they're located, all the while pretending that I live in Canada when I'm in the field. So it was a total, it took up pretty much my entire brain for 5 months, just pretending I was this other person.
Wow. And so as this is happening, so Eric, the founder of Sound Investigations, he's financing it. And so this is enabling you to actually take this time, full time, to go and dedicate yourself to meeting with key personnel inside of what was previously MindGeek and is now ALO.
That's correct. And the goal was to get them admitting to illegal activities, to not having really improved their ways since the supposed reform after Nicholas Kristof's article came out.
Because after that came out, there was no, they couldn't just say, oh, we didn't know, you know, they, at that point, they pretty much, there was so much pressure, public pressure, they had to take action. So they said, we're going to make these modifications and we're going to make these adjustments. And
I believe what they did was they took down tons of videos. I mean, what, a million, was it? Like around a million videos?
A million.
Okay, okay. So more. 10 million videos. They just deleted them. They, I believe, hired more outsourced content moderators so they could say they had more. And then they began requiring a user who wanted to upload to Pornhub to be verified. So they would take their ID and verify that they're a real person and that they were over 18. But, well, this brings me to undercover expose number one, where a Pornhub employee of 11 years, who's actually the seventh person to ever be hired there, he told me that there's a loophole that is often abused in the upload system. So although the user needs to be ID verified, others don't in the video. And we're talking about pornographic videos, so there's probably other people in them. As well as if your face isn't in a pornographic video that you upload, how can you verify a face on an ID to someone's body parts? So he thought it was so much of a loophole, a liability, that he brought this to his higher ups, to the CLO and the CPO there. And he recorded this meeting just to have it on the record saying, hey, this is a problem that can get us in trouble. And I don't want it to ever be said that I didn't address this. But they told him to F off and shut up. So it's something they've swept under the rug. He admits that there's traffickers, rapists who use this loophole to upload abuse videos. And he says that it won't be addressed because it would hurt profits. So that was video number one.
Wow. Did you intentionally seek out this particular person to meet with first? Or was there a handful that you were hoping?
Yeah, there are several that we found online that we wanted to meet with. But this person's name was Mike Farley. He is a product manager at Pornhub. So he's been there for a really long time, very senior position. Large team works under him, deals with compliance, legal, trust and safety stuff. So this is all part of his wheelhouse that he has to deal with. And yeah, he was one of the people we wanted to meet with, but it really just, you never know who you're going to be able sure. to, you know,
right.
So it worked out.
And so you sit down with him. Are you like, how's that conversation get? And I don't know if you're able to talk about that.
Yeah. Or like, I mean, it was surprisingly easy. I really think part of the advantage was this industry hadn't really seen undercover journalism before. And coupled with the fact that we were operating in Canada, where they're based out of, Canada, you don't see a lot of undercover journalism there. I just don't think people think about it. There may be certain industries in the U.S. where employees are told to be careful of undercover journalists. But in Canada and in the porn industry, I just don't think it's something they're aware of. So I think his guard was down. And when I was interested in what he did for work, he was very obliging.
When something like this is happening and you're in that moment, what are you thinking as you're hearing this stuff?
It's a weird zone to be in. There's adrenaline, there's nerves. There's me trying to remember all the questions I want to ask.
Right.
So when I am getting answers to the questions, real answers, not just, you know, avoidant statements, I get excited. I know that sounds weird.
No, yeah.
But no, I don't get angry. I don't think, oh, you're a horrible person. No, in the moment, I'm just focused on what's my next question.
Yeah.
So,
because the conversation's going somewhere, the information that you're after is,
I'm achieving a goal.
I'm
having my suspicions confirmed finally, and it's relief. So I'm excited. I want more. I want him to keep talking. And yeah, that's what I try to focus on, even though It is very nerve-wracking.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, so he's sharing these things. Did you get a sense that there, I guess in my head, I would think that these people would be so embarrassed and ashamed of what they're participating in, that there would be some reticence to just openly divulge this kind of incriminating information. What kind of impression did you get from these people as you're talking with them?
I would say, as a, in general, all the employees I spoke to were just very matter of fact, very, well, it's just the way the industry is, and it's not me doing it. I'm just an employee there. It's just my job. And I'm a tech guy. I do this thing. I think Mike Farley even said to me, my job wouldn't be any different if it was videos of kittens. And I'm thinking, well, you wouldn't have to deal with all the compliance and legal stuff if you were publishing videos of kittens.
Right.
But I kept that part to myself.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So I really, you know, they're a pig in the machine. They are not the machine themselves, I guess you could say. To be fair, most of these people I sat down with, they're very nice people. They're just your normal person. If you saw them walking down the street, you wouldn't think, huh, mm-hmm. that guy looks like a basement-dwelling Pornhub employee.
Right,
you
right,
know?
Right. So for their part, there's some kind of cognitive dissonance operating to, yeah, keep them in these roles. Like, there's an objective acknowledgement of kind of how the system operates, but for their part, have removed themselves in a way. It's like, well, I'm just doing a certain function there, but don't really feel that like accountability to the larger system of what's going on.
Exactly. And I do think at least one of them, or a couple of them maybe, even celebrate the work they do. So on the flip side of, you know, just a cognitive dissonance, they celebrate the work they do. They're very like sex work positive. They think porn is a positive thing that helps people embrace their sensuality, whatever. So I saw a couple different sides of the coin there.
Most kids have been exposed to pornography by age 13. Some are addicted even as young as 6. So how is pornography shaping the lives of impressionable children and adolescents? Our documentary, Raised on Porn, exposes the ways pornography has become the new sex education for children and unpacks the dangerous lifelong implications of this global phenomenon.
I was like, this is my chance of actually getting pornography for myself.
The film features real stories of childhood exposure paired with experts who weigh in on the reality children are facing.
It's absolutely impossible for them to resist this kind of stimulus.
It's already garnered millions of views, and 93% of viewers polled said it inspired them to be more proactive in protecting their children from porn. You can watch Raised on Porn for free on YouTube or go to raisedonporn.com.
So, can you describe what you perceive to be the problem with Pornhub / ALO, their parent company? And how these, and maybe we can get into talking, because you've done 5 videos.
Yes.
And are there more?
There's more. Yeah, there's going to be at least 2 more.
Okay.
If not 7, several more.
So 7 plus
yeah.
videos in total. Exposing the ALO through their employees.
Mm-hmm.
And different people, 7 plus different people.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So can you describe the problem that exists with Pornhub / ALO, and then how these videos are in a way corroborating the problem and helping to galvanize action to hold them accountable.
Absolutely. So to summarize, the issues covered and confirmed in the videos are a lack of verification of age or consent for participants in pornographic videos uploaded to tube sites like Pornhub, as well as a lack of verification of age or consent on pornographic ads run on Pornhub and other, you know, affiliated platforms. Gosh, there's so much. The content moderation issue, you know, employees being told to make a judgment call on whether someone's underage or not, on if they're wearing makeup or if they have a tattoo or if they have a piercing.
Like those things would be qualifiers that if they have a tattoo,
then they're maybe probably they're 18. Age. Yeah, so pass it through. And one content moderation employee told us they were using like makeup as a criteria. So, oh, this girl looks like she could be 16, she could be 18, we don't know. Well, she's wearing makeup, so just let it.
Crazy.
Yeah, like I was wearing makeup at 12,
right,
you know.
Right.
But we also have footage of an employee saying they purposefully cater their pornographic ads to pedophiles and young teens, as he put it. So lots of implications there. I believe that under like U.S. code, I forget, maybe like 1470 or something, you can't transfer obscene materials to a minor. So purposefully catering ads to appeal to young teens may cross those lines. I mean, we have so much. In a future video, we'll have an employee saying that they hope 12-year-olds watch their content to learn about sex. You know, people who work on the ads platform not suspending advertisers who upload videos of underage people, and also confirming with us that they will not contact the authorities in any way if we as the advertiser were to upload underage videos. So there's a lot, but in a nutshell, it's they don't care if someone's underage as long as they don't get caught. They don't care if someone doesn't consent as long as they don't get caught. They, you know, to quote one of the employees, didn't give an F about revenge porn or rape, didn't care about victims, would only reject uploads if someone was literally getting murdered, in the employee's words. So.
Wow. Just a complete reckless disregard for individuals that are being exploited in these videos.
Absolutely. And I really do believe these undercover videos confirm what survivors have been saying this whole time, except the adult industry doesn't want to listen to them because it's inconvenient for their bank accounts. And every single video, there's someone says, well, but it makes a lot of money, so, or, well, that would get in the way of profits, so, it's every single time I would sit down with someone, that would be part of their, you know, statement to me, but it makes a lot of money, so. So I really do believe these videos confirm out of the horse's mouth what is really going on behind the scenes. Positive things that have happened in reaction to our videos thus far: 26 attorneys general signed a joint letter to ALO, Pornhub's parent company, demanding changes and demanding a response. By the way, they didn't respond. So we're outside that time period they were given to respond. So I'm curious and very hopeful these attorneys general will really crack down and follow up on that letter. And we do have some lawmakers interested in speaking with us. Nothing solid I can say yet as far as that goes, but we are getting positive responses. We got cited as evidence in a class action lawsuit against ALO, one of the Girls Do Porn cases. And yeah, good things are happening. I'm hoping that survivors in litigation will be able to use our videos as evidence. We hope to aid anyone fighting that fight against ALO.
Mm-hmm.
And we're hoping to change laws and have existing laws enforced.
Yeah, so because the idea of a site like Pornhub, the way that they presented themselves was that this is it was like a very tongue-in-cheek attitude about, you know, the idea of this being just kind of this erotic content and like a one-stop shop for everyone to help facilitate their masturbation or whatever the idea of it was. And yet what we see is behind the scenes a much more sinister picture of their attitude about this content. And so actually it's not just about something that's pop culture chic, a little bit erotic. It's not this like cool, edgy, sex positive thing that's happening there. It's something that is sinister. It's something that is predatory and something that is criminal. And so I wish I could say that the people at home who are watching these videos are all hoping and believing that this is consensual content, that the people are of age. But sadly, there are people who are actively seeking out this kind of content, because otherwise, why does Pornhub even still exist after what we already know? People are still going to this site. So I think part of my hope is that with the work that you're doing, is people really continue to digest the reality and internalize the reality of the actuality of what Pornhub really is, what these videos are, and decide, and like that people will make a conscious choice to protest any participation in the using of these criminal sites. And it's so sickening that on these massive websites are videos of people whose lives are being completely destroyed as a result of, you know, the things that are happening to them, and many of them underage, many of them being trafficked, others coerced, manipulated, abused, raped, all these things. It's so nauseating, it's so sickening. And I think that one thing that's become so clear to me is these people in the porn industry are not going to self-regulate. So it requires action on the part of like caring citizens to take action to hold these people accountable first and foremost through our own pocketbooks, not participating in, you know, visiting these websites. But also, I mean, I just think, you know, the work that you're doing, how important that is. You are one person who decided not to let this go and to lean deeper into it. And it's, you know, it's just creating a whole new wave of awareness about the realities that are going on. And so how, what do you think is needed in this at this moment? I mean, for you guys, Sound Investigations, in the larger fight, where do you think we're going to see the most traction, or there's the greatest need to be able to complete, you know, the mission of bringing an end to this corrupt criminal company?
I really do think, politics are downstream of culture. It is going to take more New York Times articles. It's going to take more news coverage. This is an issue that, especially after Nicholas Kristof published The Children of Pornhub, he was absolutely attacked by the adult industry and all these media outlets that side with the adult industry. And Nicholas was greatly mischaracterized as someone who was just wanting to attack the porn industry in general and had this moral agenda or whatever they called it. And we need more media outlets, more journalists willing to take on that fight with the adult industry, which is a really hard thing to do. But like you said, they will fight tooth and nail before they have to self-regulate because everything is about profits for them. If something cuts into profits, they're going to fight, they're going to sue, they're going to do whatever they need to do to not be compliant with whatever people are asking them to be compliant with. They see everything, every regulation as an attack on who they are. And it's a huge issue. So we need brave journalists. We need news outlets who aren't just going to automatically side with the adult industry because they think it's cool or they think they're going to look so accepting because of it, or you know, that whole culture of, you know, siding with sex work because sex workers are, yeah, like, sex isn't work. Work isn't sex.
Right.
We don't have to pretend it is. We could call it like it is. And if any industry is going to be allowed to legally operate, it's fair that we ask there to be regulations so that children aren't hurt, adults aren't hurt. It's the bare minimum.
For other people that you would maybe consider, I'm trying to think about what is the message to people in your like peer age group who are, you know, I mean, I'm just so struck and inspired by your story from the standpoint of taking action. Like, I love something that this photographer from National Geographic said. He said, you're either an activist or an inactivist. And what message do you have for your peer group in terms of how they should be interacting with issues like this that really matter in the world?
It sounds cheesy, and it kind of is, but like, don't be afraid of what society is going to think of your opinion. It takes people talking about things on social media nowadays for changes to be made. It really does. We need to use social media as a tool. You know, people are going to call you a Puritan if you speak out against sexual exploitation, apparently. People are going to tell you you have like a moral religious agenda, which you do not have to be a religious person at all to care about these issues.
Totally.
So don't let people shame you into thinking you're a horrible person to care about ending sexual exploitation online, at least making it harder for these huge companies that have huge monopolies over the adult industry to operate and profit off of exploitation. It is a bare minimum ask that people are going to try to mischaracterize and mischaracterize over and over again.
Totally. I think our impression when we started to address some of these issues was like, first, the discovery that there are these situations where there are abuses that are taking place, not on some dark web, Eastern European, you know, website, but on the largest pornography platforms in existence, ones that have been promoted by celebrities, had ads in Times Square, been, you know, participants and sponsors of New York Fashion Week. So these large pornography platforms, just the knowledge that these people have been participating in, enabling and profiting from videos of real abuse and trafficking and rape and all these things. Just discovering that was so mind-blowing. Like, what? like, this is what's actually going on, coming to the realization that this is not a website to of just harmless, innocuous, voluntary and consensual sexual videos, that this website is infested with videos of a criminal nature that are capturing and immortalizing people's trauma from being sexually violated and abused and exploited and taken advantage of. And all of that was a discovery unto itself, that all by itself. The thought was like, when people find this out, we're all going to agree to do away with it, to change all of this, to, you know, end these websites. And I think it was maybe a little bit naive for us to think that way. But to your point, I think one of the more like shocking and disturbing discoveries was the pushback from these large mainstream media outlets, essentially operating as shills for the porn industry, despite what is clearly black and white criminal wrong exploitation. And it's just so bizarre to think that, like, we're trying to call attention to things that we as a society should all agree should never happen, rape, much less videoing that and putting it up on a website. And yet these large media platforms minimizing, dismissing, obfuscating, sanitizing, reverse blaming, twisting and reframing, doing all of these gymnastics to make us out to be the enemy. The ones who are, they're like, well, you tweeted something 10 years ago that was like, seemed like it might be anti this or that, you know? And I'm just like, you have billions of hours of content of like people being completely degraded, humiliated, violated, and exploited. And you're gonna like build an entire article dismissing all that because I tweeted something 10 years ago? Like, what are you talking about? And so it was such a strange, bizarre experience for us suddenly to find ourselves in the crosshairs of this backlash campaign that was trying to silence us, discredit us, shut us down for simply calling attention. It's like, we don't want any attention. We want to keep our heads down. We want to keep doing work to fight injustice in the world. But we have to call attention to this. And it's like something that we should all be able to agree on ends up becoming the source of all of this backlash. And it's just been, I think it's just taught us a lot about the world that we live in and the work that we have left to do. It's absolutely crazy. I'm curious, in your experience, what it's been like since coming out with some of these videos.
Overall, it's been positive. I'll speak to the positive first. I didn't realize when doing this, when publishing the videos and coming out and doing interviews, I had the mindset going into it, I was losing a lot from doing that. But really, I've come to realize I've gained a huge community, including yourself and the whole Exodus Cry team, that are supportive, care about the issues I care about, are there for me, are there for our work. And I feel like I've gained so much from doing it. Whereas before I did it, I thought I was taking this huge risk. I was going to lose a lot. But that being said, there have been some negative things. A couple scary, weird calls. Definitely. We've been, of course, threatened legally by ALO, Pornhub's parent company, twice now, demanding that we take down the videos, blah, blah, blah. You know, all the lawyer stuff. But really, overall, other than being threatened legally and having some like scary, weird calls, that's it so far. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I commend you for your bravery and your courage. It takes a lot of It takes some guts to you know, dedicate yourself to this work over such a long period of time, going into these situations. I've been there myself in different contexts, and I know how difficult and challenging and anxiety inducing all this can be. For somebody like yourself who had a trajectory in acting, you know, in a culture that valorizes celebrities and visibility and all that, to risk being canceled, to risk, you know, just the backlash of challenging this global behemoth, global commercial sex industry system. I just really, you know, commend you for that. And we absolutely are here for you for whatever it's worth.
Thank you.
Hopefully you guys will be there for us too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think, you know, at the end of the day, and I'm going to give you the last word here in a second. At the end of the day, for us, I mean, there's so many layers to this to dig into, but I think this conversation has really been about just the main and plain black and white issue that there are real people whose exploitation is being captured on film and uploaded without restraint to websites like Pornhub, and just that is so wrong. When that happens, that is so wrong. And we should all agree. We should all agree that we want to see that stop. Whether somebody is for or against pornography, we can all agree that criminal, you know, violent, exploitative content like this should not be hosted, should not be advertised, should not be accessible. And so, yeah, I think that's my hope in having conversations like this, continue to invite people to take a stand. And okay, I'm just going to say this last thing and then I'll give you the last word. So somebody I saw made this point about, like, started to sort of like question the veracity of pornography as a genre and of media. And it was like very quick. And then, like, you know, of course, like all the porn loyalists, you know, began to bash her for even asking the question. She's a large social media platform. And so immediately came out with a post affirming that she's pro-porn and used that exact language of being like pro-porn. And my thought was that until we reach a point that you can guarantee the protection of children, either being in the videos or exposed to the videos, then how can you even, it's not even a conversation at this point. Like, there's no protections in place for children being exposed to this hardcore graphic content. And there's no like effective moderation system to make sure that underage children are not being used in these videos. Until that happens, how can you even say that? And so I think the idea of being pro-porn right now suggests that the protection of children is not very important to us as a society. And I think that's really sad. I think that will be our demise as a culture if that doesn't change.
Absolutely. We are seeing people put their own sexual pleasure before the protection of innocence. And it's heartbreaking to
well
see.
Said.
Yeah. And suddenly these pro-porn people are like the hugest free speech advocates in the world when you mention any type of reasonable regulation on the industry, right? It's very funny to see them come forward and suddenly be like a First Amendment hero. But I really want to say again and express again, without the work that Exodus Cry has done, Sound Investigations wouldn't have had anything to go on. I don't think we would have even had the awareness to look into Pornhub in this way. So thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to like get to know you more and get to know your team more. So thank you. This has been such a good experience.
Likewise. Thank you. Absolutely. Just to bring this all the way back to where you started this conversation, and I think I just want to leave off here to highlight this theme that, you know, for your part, your own, I think of your own personal story into this, growing up in an acting context in which that part of you was not protected or maybe preyed upon in some way, whether it be suggestively or whatever. I don't know your full story. I think that it's just important to say that our, if we're looking for a society, for a conscience as a society, which I think we are right now, or at least we should be, where is our conscience? I think it needs to start there of how do we protect children, and that really our strongest fight should be for the protection of children. And so so thank you for, you know, all the work that you're doing and to that end. And I think that this is some of the most difficult and challenging work is speaking truth to power, holding perpetrators accountable, especially in the way that you're going about it. And we're just so inspired by your efforts. And I just know I speak on behalf of my whole team at Exodus Cry and just saying thank you so much for your bravery and everything that you're doing. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
You can check out all our podcast episodes, articles, and films at exoduscry.com and join the daily conversation by following Exodus Cry on all major social platforms.